You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us on the Civic Media Network. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. It's 6:06 right now. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. Big day. What did you take away from Governor Evers' State of the State address last night? We'd love to hear from you, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. As you know, the governor delivered his final State of the State address. He outlined priorities for his last year in office. He received, after receiving bipartisan standing ovation, everybody was happy at the beginning. That's how we like to see it. This year is, according to the governor, he has named it the Year of the Neighbor after last year being the Year of the Kid. He wants us to emphasize unity, kindness, and concern about political division and federal policy impacts. I think the governor may have had a little drink or two before he made that decided on that, because
At first it was all kumbaya. Things were good, yeah, right?
No, but I'm very happy he's trying to emphasize unity and kindness.
Yeah.
And he was worried about a lot of things. We have a lot of audio, a lot of things to get to, Jamie. It started off, like you said, everybody in the chamber very happy.
Yes.
For a while.
They were. In case you didn't catch it, he spoke for just over an hour last night. And I thought it was interesting. It was a juxtaposition that I found fascinating, because he finished right as the polls started closing yesterday all across Wisconsin. So it was a reminder that democracy was literally happening in real time in front of our eyes, which always makes me very excited. I thought it was also interesting that he walked right up to the podium and he opened with, "It's gonna be a blast." And he kept that very energetic, kind of fiery, feisty tone throughout, which is a little different than we see from Governor Evers a lot of the times. Right. And I also thought it was very fascinating, because a lot of people thought he was just gonna get up there and really just phone it in, do a retrospective view of what he has done in his last 7 years as governor. And that was not what we got last night. In fact, he expressed some worry about federal layoffs, tariffs, immigration enforcement, the gerrymandered maps. We'll talk about that in a bit. And he urged cooperation in Wisconsin. And this is what he had to say about immigrants. This is cut one, please.
I'm also angry when I think about our neighbors, young kids and families across the state who aren't going to school or work or anyplace else because they're scared. Leaving their home may mean their family will be torn apart. I worry about our kids who are being traumatized by violence on social media, in the news, on our streets, and in our neighborhoods. And I worry about what all this means for America's dairyland, which has depended on the hard work of immigrants for generations.
I mean, that was to close. That was part of his closing remarks. So that tells you how fiery the governor was throughout the entire evening. He thanked his supporters and his wife, Kathy, of course, kindergarten sweethearts, as we like to call the governor and his lovely wife. And he said he'll share more reflections in a future farewell address. He did highlight several of his achievements, Brian.
You have to.
Yeah,
and,
yes.
You know, and there were a number of them, so it's fine. But back to your original point, I'm glad he didn't make this a, hey, let's pat me on the back.
This right.
I put in a long time. This was, I'm going out, I still have time.
Yeah.
And we're going to get things done, and we're going to do it this way. And yes, well, so what did he pick to highlight for himself?
He started by basically urging the Republicans to stay in Madison and continue their work at the Capitol, because as we've discussed on this program, the plan is for them to basically gavel out sometime this week, maybe into next week, and basically take a 9-month vacation. Evers wants them to continue working because he has a lot on his agenda. So let's start there by talking about that. This was what he had to say to the GOP lawmakers. Cut two, please.
We can't afford for lawmakers to lose focus on the future we've been working hard to build together just because it's an election year. So I know the legislature would rather hit the road and take the rest of the year off, but I'm going to ask lawmakers to stick around until our work here is finished.
That's when he lost Robin Voss.
Well. Yeah. That's what? Do my job. What are you, out of your mind?
This is crazy. I have vacation next week. I've got my tickets already booked. No. But Governor Evers did highlight priorities, including land conservation funding, postpartum Medicaid coverage, and also lowering prescription drug costs. Republicans have proposed spending right around $2.4 billion in surplus on property tax relief, special education funding, and also disaster relief, along with some tax rebates. Now, of course, we know that there have been some tensions among the Republicans and Governor Evers, as Republicans have urged him to essentially take a deal, why he says that the proposals they've offered are not enough. Now, this was one of the most shocking moments, I think, of the night, especially for our panel that we had assembled here on Civic Media. He actually called for a constitutional amendment banning partisan gerrymandering, which I totally agree with, right? But he plans a special session this spring. This is cut three, please.
New maps are redrawn every 10 years. While we have fair maps today, we still don't have a nonpartisan redistricting process in place. That means there's no guarantee Wisconsinites still have fair maps after the next census. So tonight I'm announcing that I'll be calling a special session of the legislature this spring to take up a constitutional amendment to ban partisan gerrymandering once and for all in Wisconsin.
Now, it was fascinating because at the beginning of his remarks, he even had some of the Republicans standing and giving him an ovation on some of the more bipartisan things that have taken place in the last 7 years. By the time he got to a special session on gerrymandering, They were just stuck in their seats.
He had already asked them to stick around and do their job, which did not go over well. And now what? Oh, you're going to try to make it so we can't reconjigger our maps and try to win?
Right.
Because we can't win straight up. We got to win on a map. So what happened, Tony? Things were going so well. We were all getting along. It's the year of the neighbor. Why are you upsetting us?
Why did you step over that line? You crossed my fence, so to speak. I thought it was interesting, though, listening, because at the beginning, there was a lot of talk about bipartisanship, and you heard the comments of the two parties working together. The speech, though, to me, was much more combative than that. At least it is more than what we, I think, expected, especially when it came to issues like health care and also gun violence, and obviously calling out the role of this particular legislature. He didn't sound like somebody who wanted to coast to the finish line. In fact, he laid out a pretty strong agenda for the remainder of this legislative session. He made it clear that he wants lawmakers to stay at the Capitol. He made it clear that they must keep working. And it felt like a guy who was trying to define the next chapter of what Wisconsin should look like and really separate himself from the president, the National Republican Party, and also the state Republican Party. He was passing a baton, so to speak, I think, last night.
It was a legacy, setting up a legacy final, part of his term, and his exit is going to be, he's not going out with a whimper. He's not just Irish goodbying the state.
No.
He's staying, he's getting things done. He's going to try to get things done, I should say. And he's going to move on. And he didn't spare any soft words for the Republicans, especially when it came to health care and things like that they are, he said, Republicans are responsible for this, and that will be remembered when it came to costs and affordability. And he left guns blazing, so to speak.
He did. And, he talked a lot about public health and public safety last night. If you've missed his address, he did announce a partnership with the Milwaukee Bucks to launch a campaign against domestic violence. He also highlighted child care and education efforts, including the Get Kids Ready program, which is expected to help up to 24,000 kids in this state. And he announced, which he is not the first Democratic governor to do this, he actually announced that he's going to be signing an executive order in the coming weeks to have Wisconsin join the World Health Organization's Global Outbreak Alert and Response Network. And again, that is in direct response to what's happening on the federal level. And so this is cut four.
Folks, public health is not a partisan issue, and it isn't up for debate. It's why in the coming weeks I'll sign an executive order to have Wisconsin join the World Health Organization's Global Response Network.
I mean, yeah, we've seen several Democratic governors do this in mm-hmm. very blue.
Illinois has done it.
Yep. California was one of the first to also do it. But in either Democratic leaning or very purple states, the swing states, I believe Josh Shapiro has also looked at this in Pennsylvania. I don't know if he's actually signed on, but I mean, it makes sense. The Democratic governors are doing what they need to make sure people are protected and safe. And even when the federal government doesn't want to do that, and it feels like there's a dereliction of duty there.
No, the federal government is busy. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is working out with Kid Rock and drinking milk in a sauna and doing an ice plunge in blue jeans.
Of course.
I don't know if you've seen this new propaganda film that came out. It was, it's one of those things where as I watched it, and we'll get right back to the governor, just a sidebar, I watched it and I thought, what kind of world are we living in? Where this is supposedly our Secretary of Health.
Right.
And he's in jeans, shirtless, doing push-ups while Kid Rock rides a exercise bike. What?
It's very strange.
Where are we? What universe?
We are not in this reality. We are not the reality that Tony Evers was in last night.
Tony Evers is talking about unity and empathy and doing things. And Kid Rock is literally flipping off the camera during his exercising.
It is. This is why Tony Evers is going to sign that executive order for the World Health Organization.
Yes.
And we'll let Kid Rock and RFK have their moment in time together working out and saunaing together, I guess.
Oh, my God.
These are the things that we talk about now in 2026.
A lot of talk last night about energy,
yes.
Renewable energy, data centers, a lot of talk from the governor about that.
Yeah, and I thought one of the most surprising announcements that he made was the plan to purchase 225,000 megawatt hours of renewable energy annually for the next 20 years, which obviously does a lot for Wisconsin households, right?
Right, and I like that he did explain in common plain
yes.
English, this is what that means, folks.
Yes, that's what I think I've always appreciated about Tony, right? He's not a flashy guy, but because he's been in education so long, he knows how to talk to people. And I think that's what people have really loved about Tony Evers as governor of this state. But he did say that the state of Wisconsin is going to partner with UW-Madison to explore nuclear energy as a clean power source. He also mentioned entering into a fusion energy plan with UW. This is cut five, please.
Our newly created Ignite Wisconsin program is going to make strategic investments to advance startups in our state, targeting sectors to boost our homegrown innovation. This includes connecting the dots to invest in the Wisconsin Fusion Energy Coalition, anchored by UW-Madison's Fusion Research, so Wisconsin becomes a national hub for commercializing fusion energy.
No. What I appreciate about that is he's obviously looking at different sources of energy to help alleviate the costs for a lot of families across the state. I think it also, with UW losing funding, I think this is a great way for them to maybe bring back some of that job and some of the what's been lost, again, at the federal level. Go ahead.
No, I'm just agreeing with you. Let's wrap it up.
We got to get to a break, right? Parker's like, go. 6:19 right now, Civic Media Mornings. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Christy Noem has upset the Coast Guard. What? We'll talk about it next on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
It's 6:22 right now. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Anytime you want to jump in, you can do so at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. That is the phone number. That's how you text. That's how you get a hold of Jamie and myself. Unless you're Kristi Noem, lose that number because she is aggravating everybody now, even the Coast Guard. And I know the Coast Guard is a branch of the military, even though sometimes people don't remember that. But it is Coast Guard and then Space Force. Those are the two that people forget, you know, the most. But Coast Guard's an important branch of the military. Well, Kristi Noem and the Coast Guard leadership are now at each other because of priorities and resource use. They say the dispute involves the expanded use of Coast Guard aircraft for immigration deportation flights, which some officials say strains their aviation units. Yes, everything is going to this this immigration crackdown. Right. Every branch is getting pulled. Everybody's getting redistributed so that, oh, we've got to get everybody out of this country. And so it's only Donald Trump and Kristi Noem and Stephen Miller left.
And let's be realistic. Wow, that's all? That's all we have left is those three?
That's all that's staying. Well, sure, because he's going to start... he'll probably keep Pam Bondi around.
Okay. Well,
he won't need Caroline Leavitt because there'll be no voices against him anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it'll just be, yeah.
What I think is fascinating about this story is that the Coast Guard has this longstanding mission, which is literally to protect lives at sea, safeguard the environment.
Yeah, it's right in the name.
Right? And defend U.S. economic interests on our waterways. Nowhere does it say that you should do the bidding of DHS Secretary Kristi Noem. No, that's not in there whatsoever.
No.
According to this report, the use of Coast Guard aircraft for deportation flights has surged. Hundreds of flights have been redirected from traditional missions like maritime patrol and search and rescue. Some current and former officials say that's putting added strain on what is already limited resources, creating concern that there's longstanding missions that are being deprioritized. The Department of Homeland Security disputes that claim and says that the Coast Guard continues to balance all of its responsibilities. I don't think that's what's happening at all. I think she's just upset because we know that there have been reports that she and other parts of the Trump administration have had a longstanding affair. These are reports from sources within the administration. And just a couple of weeks ago, she actually left some things on an aircraft after whatever this little tryst was that she was having. And the
really?
Coast Guard had to bring her those items. And then she got upset because, well, they were like, well, here's these items you left behind in the midst of all. See, I think this has a little bit more to do with
the mind
that.
Reels. I am concocting the scenario in my head of what she could have left behind, and it's shocking.
Yes.
Just
yes.
Shocking.
And I don't want to be one of those people that does the tabloid fodder, but the reports of this alleged affair are coming from other sources inside their own administration. So
it's been out for a long time that she and Corey Lewandowski are allegedly a romantic entanglement. Mm, is that what we call it now?
I think that's the appropriate term.
Going back to Goop. Yeah. And a little Gwyneth Paltrow. But it's no secret that's the person that allegedly is part of this. And we'll say allegedly because I'm not a Coast Guard member who had to carry dirty underwear back to anybody.
Ew.
Not that that's what they had to do. But
could have been hair extensions. It's fine.
that was my first thought when we started the story.
Wow.
To be fair.
See? You talk about getting intimate in a plane and things come off. It's not hair. The hair they just vacuum up. They're not going to carry like some possum tail back to Kristi Noem and go, here, you want to tape this back on your noggin, Secretary?
This is true.
I'm surprised that, you know, you would think that the Department of Defense can commandeer aircraft from branches of the military. I'm surprised that DHS is able to do that, too. I know they do use military aircraft for a lot of their flights that we see in the commercial every night a million times Christine Ohm telling us that the runway is your home, which...
Okay. So. Whatever they throw at terms, and I don't always understand exactly what they mean. But the relationship reportedly worsened between DHS and the Coast Guard after an early incident involving aircraft use during a search for a missing service member. And there have been other reports of internal clashes and morale concerns. Critics have also questioned the purchase of that new Gulfstream jet and several of them for DHS travel. And
well, then you don't have to worry about any of your personal items.
This is this is where there's always a reason why this administration does stuff, right? Like there's always a little bit more to every story. Now, despite all of the criticism, we know that the president has publicly defended Kristi Noem and says that she is doing a very good job.
Well, of course, because she was out. I don't know if you saw the clip the other day of her making a speech saying she is going to make sure only the right people win the election.
Yes,
she is another attack dog of his, just like Caroline Leavitt. She will do whatever it takes to please him. She will do whatever it takes to continue to grab more power for herself. I think it's easy to sit and judge and say, boy, it's got to be an empty life when that's your whole goal. And I may seem judgmental because, let's be honest, I am. I just don't understand it.
We get paid to be judgmental.
That's the job. Thank goodness. I would hate to have a job where I had to be impartial all the time.
Frank from Point Ed, listening on WMDX this morning, says, I hear it was her favorite blanket that got left behind. The woman is nuts. Thank you very much for clearing that up.
A blanket
is way better than where my mind was going.
It depends what you're covering that blanket with.
This is true.
You know,
this
using
is
that
true.
Blanket to cover.
When it comes to the Coast Guard, though, remember, they take an oath to support and defend the Constitution and to follow lawful orders. It's a nonpartisan commitment,
Don't bring up lawful and unlawful orders, Jamie. I don't want to get called in front of Congress. It's a whole thing.
620,
we cannot question.
629 right now, Civic Media Mornings. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan, and we will talk a little bit about the Democrats maybe having an upper hand on the Civic Media Network.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. You're listening to the Civic Media Network, Civic Media Mornings. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. President Trump campaigned. One of his many promises was that he was going to bring prices down on day one. Well, we all kind of know that didn't happen. But is there any progress? And what can Democrats do to bolster that promise and maybe make some of it come true? Paul Glastras is the editor-in-chief of Washington Monthly. They are an independent media organization based in Washington, D.C. He was previously a speechwriter for President Clinton and a correspondent and editor at U.S. News and World Report. WashingtonMonthly.com is where his writings can be found, and he just put out a new piece about the affordability bidding war. Paul, thank you for being here. We appreciate your time this morning. Now, despite the administration claiming that affordability is a term made up by the Democrats, you wrote that there's now, like I said, a bidding war between the two parties over affordability. Can you explain that? What does that mean, a bidding war?
So you're right. The president does what the lawyers call arguing in the alternative, right? Okay. My client didn't kill that man. And if he did kill him, it was in self-defense, right? So affordability... We have the best economy, there's no really issue with the economy. It's all great. And affordability is literally, he said, a hoax, a Democratic fake news. And I have the best ideas for bringing prices down. So he is rolling out and has over the last couple of months and will in this upcoming State of the Union address, which is not very far away. Talking about ideas to bring prices down. And for instance, there was briefly talk of capping credit card interest rates at 10%, sending people on Obamacare checks where they can go buy insurance rather than using that money to prop up to as tax credits for Obamacare, things like that. And I think we're going to hear more of these ideas because if not the president himself, his senior advisors are freaking out that that the administration has not done enough to deal with the issue that is on everyone's minds, that is driving the polls, and that is the price of things, affordability, the inability of the average American to, you know, pay for healthcare, pay for college, pay for housing, even afford groceries at the end of the month. And so our argument, my argument is when you're in a bidding war, when you're, think about this, Brian and Jamie, if you're playing poker, mm-hmm. and you have a good hand, right? You know you have a better hand. You think you have a better hand. Do you fold when the other party bets? Do you meet the bet? Or do you raise the bet? You raise the bet. That's how you win. Democrats have the hand right now. They're the opposition.
That's right. Okay. That, can you explain that? Because the Republicans control the Congress. So most of us are thinking, well, how do the Democrats have the better hand if we don't have the votes?
Well, look at Mikey Sherrill, the new governor of New Jersey. Look at Abigail Spanberger, the new governor of Virginia. Look at Zoran Mamdani, the new mayor of New York. All three of them ran on ideas about affordability. Remember, Mamdani was going to have free buses, municipal grocery stores, rent freeze. Abigail Spanberger says she's going to go after pharmacy benefit managers who drive up healthcare costs, and she's going to go after electric utilities that are having electric rates being driven up by data centers. Mikey Sherrill did the same thing on the data centers and also said she's going to go after price gouging in the grocery area. So those are three candidates who put out aggressive, doable ideas to bring prices down. All three of them won. So Democrats can right now, in the run-up to the midterms, start throwing ideas out, and not bad ideas, not ideas that won't work, but ideas that could. And what we've done in the latest issue of the Washington Monthly is lay out several much bigger ideas that people are talking about now that would work, we think, as policy, and maybe work politically.
Now, you also say that Democrats face some sort of political trap if they end up cooperating with President Trump. And so what is the risk on both sides look like in that type of scenario?
So it is a dilemma in politics that if, let's say, President Trump comes in with the State of the Union and says, I want to cap credit card rates at 10%. He's already hinted that that's what he wants to do. I'm gonna get rid of Obamacare, but send you a check for healthcare. I think Democrats have to take each individual policy and decide on its merits as well as the politics what they're gonna do. Now, on the healthcare idea, it's a terrible idea. People see through it, right? It's just what that will lead to is fewer people with health insurance, and the health insurance they get will be of lower quality. So that's one where Democrats used to say, nope, you're on your own. We're not going to even talk about it. We're certainly going to vote against it. Capping credit cards is a different idea. There's some merit to it. It was Barack Obama's administration that first raised the issue. But there are second and third order effects that have to be taken into account. If you cap credit card rates, there's a chance that lower income working folks won't be able to get credit cards. So you have the details really matter on that. And Democrats would be well advised to say, we're happy to chat with our, you know, Republican colleagues in the White House and chat all the way through the midterms. And we can deal with this after the midterms, right? Not give an inch, but, you know, neither say yes nor no. That's good politics and actually good policy. On other things, you know, they can say yes to some things. But again, when you have the stronger hand, don't just let the other side determine what the bet is. Bet bigger. And the way for Democrats to get ahead of this bidding war that the president is trying to get them in And by the way, a bidding war is great. A bidding war is how politics is supposed to work. Both parties trying to figure out ideas that would help their voters. That's, we should be thankful that there's a bidding war. But there's smart ways to play it and smart ways to get more reform. And, and that's what we're talking about.
Paul Glastras is the editor-in-chief of Washington Monthly. He was formerly a speechwriter for President Clinton. His latest article, Let the Affordability Bidding War Begin, you can find that at washingtonmonthly.com. I thought you may have used a very good example, Paul, in the piece about electricity. And it kind of, instead of a lot of theoreticals, which are always good, but sometimes people like a concrete example. Share that example of how this bidding war works in with electricity as the focus.
Sure. So the president has already met with some of the governors to come up with some ways of making sure that the data centers don't force up people's electric rates. That's fine. That's a good thing. This shows that he understands he's in political danger. And the governors have taken that as an opportunity to get a little something done. But honestly, that's going to bear that, you know, that's an emerging problem. It isn't what's raised electric rates up till now.
Right.
What's raised electric rates up till now is we have a revolution in low-cost renewable energy, and we don't have transmission lines and other infrastructure to bring that energy into where the major cities and larger towns where most people live. And that's because investor utilities don't want the competition. They've got their sources of energy, many of it fossil fuel based, and it's not in their economic interest to allow this new lower cost electricity to come in. We had something like that problem in the Depression when electric utilities were price gouging and weren't even providing electricity to rural areas. The New Deal, Franklin Delano Roosevelt said, fine, we're going to build the Tennessee Valley Authority. We're going to create our own electricity. We're going to regulate monopoly investor-owned utilities with rate commissions. We're going to provide loans so that municipalities can create electric cooperatives. All three of those things led to decade that the electrification of the country at reasonable rates. We need a new version of the TVA to bring low-cost renewable energy to where people need it. That we know that works because it worked in the Depression in the 50s and the 60s. Some version of that, that's a good old American example. And it's one I think all Americans should get behind. But Democrats have the voters who would accept it and be excited about it. Republicans, I think, will have a hard time getting behind that. Boom, you've got an issue going into the midterms or at the very least into 2028.
Let's talk about that, the midterms in 2028. If the Democrats happen to follow this advice that you give in this article in the the Washington Monthly, what could this mean for the 2028 midterms? How will this resonate with voters? Do they actually care who's solving the problems, or do they just want the problem solved?
I think a lot of voters just want the problem solved. That's what you saw in 2024. A lot of voters didn't think the Biden administration was solving their problems. They knew they didn't like Donald Trump. They thought maybe he was a crook and a liar, but maybe he'd shake things up and get them out of their misery, their economic misery. And they voted for him. And now you're seeing the support from those swing voters utterly plummet for Donald Trump. And those voters are up for grabs. And we've seen election after election since the off-year elections in November, where Democrats are winning by margins that the polls never even imagined, election after election, and they're doing it on new ideas for affordability, as I said about, you know, New Jersey and Virginia and New York. So, yes, it's just that you need more ideas. People want concrete plans for how you're going to help them, not just empty words. I know people say policy doesn't matter. It does matter. Donald Trump won with policy. He said, you know, I'm going to raise tariffs to bring back manufacturing jobs and kick out illegal aliens, and that's going to raise your wages. Everybody who voted knew that that was his plan. Right. And whether you liked it or not, it was clear. Democrats need clear plans.
What is it about the Democrats that you think doesn't allow them to come up with those clear plans? Is it that they're so busy arguing against Trump that they're not doing anything to bolster their own beliefs? And we only got about a minute left, Paul.
Yeah, I think they're torn. I think it's changing. I think the left of the party has put out bold plans in the past that have been not good politically or policy-wise, and the moderates have been afraid to do anything. What I'm seeing is the left getting behind smarter plans and the moderates getting behind bigger plans, and that's a good trend.
Well, Paul, thank you very much. Paul Glastras is the editor-in-chief of The Washington Monthly. They are an independent media organization based in Washington, D.C., washingtonmonthly.com. Go check out his latest piece, Let the Affordability Bidding War Begin. Paul, it was a pleasure. We'll talk to you again.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. More after this on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
.652 right now. We hope you're having a great start to your morning. If you're listening in Appleton and Oshkosh on WISS or in Richland Center on WRCE, thank you so much for joining us. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. Have you been following the Olympics? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I know Frank, our senior producer, does not. He eschews the Olympics at every
That's
possible,
right.
Except hockey. We always tease Frank. Because then people get on his back that he hates the Olympics. I don't think he hates the Olympics. He just he watches hockey, allegedly. But all right, listen. You know, I have been enthralled by a number of things here in the Olympics. One of them has been curling, based mostly on the Corys coming out of Duluth.
Yeah.
I enjoyed their story, but now there is a controversy. There is a potential scandal brewing in the curling world at the Olympics, and I am in. I am 100% in on this. And why? Because I'm using it as a distraction from the fresh hell that happens here
every
day. So I can look at Milan. I can look at grown men and women throwing granite stones down the ice, and I can think, ooh, you're cheating. And I can get all invested for nothing.
It's but like here's reality the deal. TV and sports all in one. I love it.
It's everything. It's ice. It's granite. It's reality TV. It's profanity. It's Canadians showing their true colors, which run not red and white, but deeply brown like the maple syrup that they export to us. That's their true color. The Canadian men's and women's teams in curling, as well as the British men's team, have all been accused of the same infraction, Jamie. I don't know if you knew this was an infraction.
I did not.
Double touching the curling stone.
Oh.
Again, not a euphemism. That's after it is released. So here, I'll give you a brief timeline.
Okay.
So Friday, Oscar Erickson of Sweden accused Canada's Mark Kennedy of breaking the rules by touching the rock again after initially releasing it down the sheet of ice. Kennedy responded with an expletive-laden outburst, which we cannot play as much as I've begged. They will not let us play his outburst.
It's too much
I was
bleeping.
Like, but it's
Sorry.
Canada. It's, you know, we should hear, because we picture Canada as Mounties and polar
Serene,
bears.
Serene, wonderful.
And everybody's, everybody loves. Yeah, don't mess with them when it comes to hockey or
right.
curling. So anyway, so. Now,
everybody
this,
has a
this,
line in the sand, Brian. Let's be real.
Well, that's true. And Mark Kennedy's was being accused of cheating, and he lambasted Erickson of Sweden. And I got to give this to Erickson. He said, well, we'll talk about it after. We'll show you the pictures.
Oh.
And then they did. They showed the video. And it appeared to me, a novice curling judge, that, yes, Canada had double tapped because he let it go. And then you see his index finger come up. But the thing is, like, when I say touch, he didn't push it with his index finger. He just touched it. And I'm like, how much does it? I guess it changes it a lot. because it's a rule.
Okay.
So then Saturday, an umpire accused another Canadian, this time a woman, Rachel Holman, of the same infraction. That's right. The umpire stopped play and the stone was removed. Holman looked shocked and denied the allegation. I think they may secretly work for the Trump administration. Don't believe what you see.
Very yes. Nice. Thank you, Parker. A little intrigue.
Surprise squirrel. Now, then, on another video backed up the umpire that Rachel Holman had, in fact, double-touched. Then on Monday, in the ninth end of Britain's round-robin game, there's 10 ends, in case you don't know curling, there's 10 ends. They were playing Germany, and Bobby Lemmy of Scotland touched the stone again. So there are rules against this, Jamie. World Curling clarified that the double tapping is not allowed. They said in a statement, during forward motion, touching the granite of the stone is not allowed. This will result in the stone being removed from play. And why should we care about this? I know you're thinking it. I see it in your face. Why should we care about this?
I am stunned that this seems like such a one of those sports where, gosh, like none of us really understand the rules enough to know what is a rule and what is not. So the fact that there are this many rules and the IOC is probably going to have to look at their rules going forward for the next Winter Olympics in 4 years is stunning to me, honestly. It's stunning.
Well, you're partially right.
Okay,
The curling world has been known for a quiet camaraderie. And there have been some scandals before. There's Broomgate. There was a sweeping-related thing in the world curling. That was solved last June. That's water under
all right,
the bridge.
All right.
That's
was
ice
like
under
the brooms
the
were too good, right?
They moved
the
on.
Brooms, yes, they were too can't good. Do that.
Can do it.
So now that we've got beef, it's a very big story. And the Canadians have taken this as a personal affront. They are not taking this. They've been humiliated on the world stage, and I don't know what they're going to do, but they're saying the friendship and the values of respect have been decimated.
Laying down like an actual gauntlet on this, basically calling out the rest of the world, right?
And Canada was expected to win the gold, and now they're back on their heels. Just quickly, if you want to learn how to curl, you could do it February 21st in Milwaukee.
That's this weekend, right? This Saturday, according to my calendar.
Yes,
love that.
I'm glad you did. From 3 to 7 at Riverwalk Commons, they're doing Frost Fest, and you can learn to curl. You can go and practice.
It.
You have some fun. So, yeah. And I understand that it seems completely irrational that I'm this fired up about it.
It's interesting, though, that something like the Olympics, where it's supposed to bring the world together, right? There's also this fierce competition among these competitors for obvious reasons. But I did not realize that I was missing so much intrigue
and drama
in this year's Olympics.
You think this drama is bad? Folks, stick around till 7:50. I brought drama this hour. Jamie's got drama next hour.
You think
curling drama is bad.
Never get in front of old women in their mahjong board. That's all we're going to say, and we'll talk about it next hour. 6:59 right now. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And after the news, tell us, how do you feel about Wisconsin Republicans not putting forward legislation to implement Governor Evers' agenda? We'll talk about that and so much more in the next hour on the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.